Yeah, where's Mel? Where does he live? Is he on Long Island somewhere?
Negative. Mel is from Brooklyn. Fairly close, sort of attached to the island. And Dick is out in Long Island, and the rest of the people, most of the people that are on the line market live in Long Island.
Oh, okay, John, very good. Yeah, very good. Yeah, I'm curious about one thing. Are you familiar with any of Howie's repeater system in Queens, WB2HWW?
I know Howie. I hear him on the radio a lot. No, I'm not familiar with his repeaters. I'm basically on the Staten Island repeater and the Long Island repeater, the one we're on now. But he's got a lot of interesting stuff. He's always out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to connect to him all the time. But lately, for the last, I would say almost the last month, I'm connecting to his system in the same way I used to connect to it. And there's never anybody on there. I don't know if I'm just connecting at the wrong time or what, but it used to be really, really busy, even busier than LimeWalk, if you can believe that. But yeah, I haven't heard of him lately, so I even went to the website to see if he made any changes to it. And it used to be connected via EchoLink to all of his repeaters, all in the system, from 6 meters, 2 meters, 440, all the way up to 10. And I don't know if that stuff is still connected or not. But anyway, I was just kind of curious. And I'm running a laptop into my broadband at home here. Usually this laptop is in my work truck. When I work for Best Buy, repairing home electronics, home appliances, basically. And we use an air card into a Magman antenna. But I may have talked to you from there already. I'm not too sure if I have or not, but I might have. And last weekend I wired in a hand mic into the computer here, mic that I used to use on a 2-meter radio, with the push-to-talk switch and everything else. So using a computer with the feel of a radio, it's pretty cool. This is 87DAW.
Very interesting, yes, because I know some guys are using, like, they have to press the space bar to be able to talk, and then they have to hit it again to drop it. So using the push button mic sounds great. I just received a new radio. I may have even talked to you about it. I got a Kenwood 2000X, and I got it 2 days ago, and for some reason I hit the gain reduction knob all the way down, and I thought I lost the primary receiver. It has two receivers in it. It took me 2 hours to realize that I had turned that knob. It's just, there's 75 buttons on this thing, and most of them have dual functions. It's wild.
Well, I can imagine if you hit that gain without knowing it. All of a sudden the radio goes quiet and you can't figure out. You think maybe the antenna is disconnected, and to pull your hair out, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's the first thing I thought, that my antenna went down, so I swapped antennas, of course, and the secondary receiver's on the same antenna, and that's working perfectly, so I said, like, that was an idiotic move. So you just keep pumping around until you accidentally fall over it. But I was thinking about packing this thing up and sending it back to the manufacturer. I was getting all depressed. So I just said, hell with it, and I went on the TechNet, and I was just listening. And very interesting. In fact, Howie was one of the last guys to sign off at the very end. You may have even heard him sign off.
No, I didn't, because I was I didn't get on until after the whole thing was done. As a matter of fact, I only got on maybe a few minutes before I heard you on here.
We've got about, I think, 10 more minutes before this repeater shuts down. I don't know the exact time it turns off, but if we get interrupted, that'll be the reason.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's 1 a.m.
What kind of weather are you having down in Port St. Lucie?
We've been having some hot weather, then hotter, and even hottest weather. The three H's. Easy, hot, and humid. But we sent some of that up your way, and I guess you got some of that last week. And Maybe you'll be getting some more. I don't know. We had some thunderstorms west of us, but they never got over this way. So it stayed mostly sunny. Got some clouds late in the day from those thunderstorms, but enough to hide the sun and cool it just a slight bit. But we've had temperatures in the mid-90s here every day now for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, we're getting it. We're getting hit up here 3 days in a row, pretty close to 90. Some days we're a little over, but that heavy humidity, we haven't been able to get a break. I don't know what's scheduled for tomorrow, but it's been a little rough up here. We're really not used to this. But compared to last year, we had nothing but rain for the whole month of June, so we'll take this weather. Exactly. Where is Port St. Lucie? Is that on the Gulf Coast?
Actually, it's on the East Coast, right on the Atlantic, and we're like 45 miles due north of West Palm Beach. So as you're going up the coast, you got Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and then you go and you get into West Palm Beach, and if you go even north of here, you get to Daytona Beach, and you know, all these little cities on the eastern coast of Florida. Like I said, I'm 45 miles north of West Palm.
Yeah, you're nestled in a very nice area there, between West Palm Beach and Daytona. You haven't heard any news about this hurricane that's supposed to come and stir that oil mess up down there, have you?
The last advisory I saw was, like, I think around 4 o'clock this afternoon. It was probably an intermediate advisory. And it had weakened to tropical depression status because it was over the Yucatan Peninsula. It's supposed to, I guess, reorganize or maybe get a little stronger again once it exits the Yucatan there and it gets over the southwestern Gulf of Mexico. But the computers that I'm seeing are going to be putting the storm back over parts of northern Mexico, and then it's going to dissipate eventually. They're saying there could be some swells that may affect that area up there, but the storm itself shouldn't get that far up north. Of course, everything with hurricanes is subject to change, but at this time, they're not really too concerned about it.
Yeah, I'm an old-timer. One time, we used to get hurricanes up here, but we haven't had anything bad in a long time. You guys down there, you live with them, that and lightning storms. But I was listening to that admiral, the Coast Guard admiral, his first name was Tad. He was describing that it will take 5 days to dismantle their pumping stations and float them into, it's like 15-day delay if this thing does come, and that will be terrible for that coast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard that, too. I said they need 5 days of warning before they, you know, to get everything out of there. And I guess if they don't get that kind of warning, there's going to be even more trouble. And I don't know. It just seems like every time they try to do something, they got to do something else and what have you. The whole thing, as far as I'm concerned, you know, there should have been safeties in that system that weren't in place. You know, you're doing deep ocean stuff. I mean, you need to install safety valves along that pipe and everything else to cap things off if there's a break, like this one. You know, there was a break on this one. And, you know, if they had something, you know, in place to be able to shut it off, then they could have done it. But, you know, everything has got to be done by remote control because they can't send divers down that low. It's like a mile down. So I guess it just makes it a real mess.
Yes, trying to do all of that remote control work with those ROVs and being able to handle tools and stuff must be exasperating for those guys. But they were thinking the next step may be they may explode that whole well, try to seal it with a bomb. And they're not even sure that'll work, so I don't know where they're going to go with that. That could be a real disaster. Have you heard any more about those relief wells they were drilling? Did you hear any more about those? We haven't gotten any news on those.
The last I heard was I don't even think they had begun drilling the relief wells yet, and they said it was going to take a good 3 months to do it. So, I mean, you know, meanwhile, you know, they're still having problems. So, you know, and they don't even know if that's going to work. So, you know, I really don't know what they can do. You know, if you put a bomb and hit something else, then you might have a worse problem than you have now. I really don't know. It's a disaster that nobody's ever seen the likes of ever in the history of mankind, I don't think, as far as, you know, ecologically speaking, anyway, you know.
I saw a program a couple of days ago where they went back to 30-year history, and they found another well that had blown, and now it's like many years later. The estuary where it was had the greatest effect still shows signs. It's recovered, but there's still oil. When they pull up weeds, they still have oil at the bottom. So, and this is leaking, from what I understand, the amount of a Valdez every 5 days. So that's an incredible amount of oil.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing. And, you know, we're not seeing the reports of what the impact is on wildlife. I mean, you know, you see some on the shoreline, but, you know, with, you know, fish and, you know, and sea creatures in the ocean and stuff in the Gulf of Mexico, you know, anywhere probably within, 50, 60 miles of that whole area probably are having a hard time if they can survive swimming through it. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I have no idea what the economic impact is going to be because of the fishing community and all of the support technologies that are with them. But those boats just sitting idle and those guys trying to make a living, it's got to be a nightmare for the whole state. And, you know, up here, all right, you know, we can't get certain shellfish, and they're not serving shrimp in certain restaurants and stuff like that. You know, that's our hardship, big deal. But down there, this is going to make Katrina like a joke.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. And what they're going to have to do is the people who depend on the fishing industry, including the shrimping industry and everything down here, you know, there'll be settlements and everything else, and they'll have to, you know, get whatever kind of money they can get in a settlement and then probably relocate to Texas or somewhere else. You know, most of these people don't know how to do anything else, so they're going to have to go to another coastal area somewhere, you know, where they can, you know, pick up and rebuild. You know.
Tom, I'll tell you one thing that really frightens me from being that I'm an old man and I'm disgruntled, disenfranchised and everything else in this country. It's scary. The numbers they're talking about money-wise that BP is going to have to come up with, you know that's not going to go to the people. The government is going to step in and probably apportion that money. And therefore, Florida is not going to see their fair share. I guarantee that. That is a given.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure that's the case. You know. Just like, you know, when Katrina hit Louisiana and Mississippi. I mean, they still have FEMA housing in there, and that's what, I don't know, how many years ago was that now, 4 years ago? I don't know. You know, the government appropriated all this money, but obviously none of it was put in the right place, or very little of it. You know, for them to have to still have FEMA huts and FEMA housing this long after the fact, you know, just tells you that, you know, to me that something is not right, you know. But I won't get into that because that's a whole new can of worms that I don't feel like opening right now. And I agree with you, and I understand how you feel, and I feel the same way. But, yeah. Where in Long Island are you anyway, John? But I may have asked you that before, but I don't remember what you might have said. I grew up in Bayville, where Peter lives now. Near Oyster Bay there. So, just curious as to where you live.
Oh, you'll know the place. It's called Staten Island. It's at the other end of the VZ Bridge. Not in Long Island. I'm just a member of Limark. And they have such a great system here with such a bunch of nice guys that I had to join this group. So that's what I'm doing on this repeater. But I have a nice shot to them from where I am. I can almost see Long Island from my antenna. so I get in there real good.
Ah, very good on the Staten Island. Yeah. Yeah, I don't talk to too many people over there, but I've been through there quite a few times. I used to take the Verrazano over to the Gothels and go into New Jersey that way. And then when I wanted to go further south, I would go out to the Outer Bridge Crossing and go that way across Staten Island. So I've been a few times through there.
Tom, I don't know when you were last through here, but our expressway and the West Shore Expressway are now like big parking lots come to rush hour. And you just don't want to be here like at 4 o'clock. It's like everybody's an idiot that's on the road, which is just basically what the Belt Parkway used to be, well, is now. But we always looked at that and said, gee, I'm glad that's not on Staten Island, but we've got it now. So we developed a lot.
I saw that coming in the 80s. I saw that that was going to be something that they were going to have to deal with, because I can remember even back then trying to get across over to the Verrazano Bridge from the Gothels. You would go about, if I can remember, you might go about 5 or 6 miles right into the middle of Staten Island there, and then it would go bumper to bumper all the way to the other bridge. And that was a mess even back then.
Yes, we have a very poorly designed expressway because, if you remember, as you were approaching the BC Bridge, as you started to go uphill, that's where the traffic, everybody would slow down because they don't know how to use their cruise control or whatever, morons. But now, with its very heavily trafficked time, we have actually cars stopped from the BC Bridge all the way to the Gothels into Jersey. It's just a mess. So they got to do something eventually here.
Yeah, there used to be a repeater over there around 146.880. I don't know if that repeater is still on the air or not over there, but I used to get on that repeater from Long Island. I used to have a pretty good size beam antenna. And I was able to get into that repeater. And with that repeater, on a good night, you can get down into Philadelphia and everything else, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I believe you're right. That is still in use, that repeater. I believe I was on that last week. Do you basically stay on 2 meters, or are you all over?
Right now, basically on 2 meters, because I don't have HF right now. That will change once the band starts to open up a little bit. Starting to save up a little. I used to have HF equipment, but I got rid of most of it when I got married about 6 years ago. But the bands are going to open up, and I'm going to get me a radio and throw up at least some kind of a dipole or a sloper or something. I've got room here to do it, so. If I'm here when the band opening, when the band starts to open back up there in a cycle, I'm going to get some HF. But it's been a while since I've been on HF.
Something good to look at is the ICOM 9100, which is not type approved yet. And as I said, I bought the TS2000X Kenwood, and it's performing beautifully. Very nice receiver, and it covers 160 all the way up to 1.2 gig.
That sounds like a nice radio to have. Do you know what it's going for?
Yeah, basically it's around $2,000. That's with the 2 gig built in, which is what the X is at the end of the 2000 model number. And the audio is great, 2 receivers, very sensitive, and pulls in some good stations. So far I'm very happy with it, but I've only got 2 days' experience with it, so it'll be an ongoing thing.
Yeah, I've done that. What antenna capabilities do you have where you're at? You got 160?
No, I haven't started on 160 or 80. I work from, I do 40, 20, 10, and 6. That's one quad beam diamond antenna. And then I have a 70 centimeter and 2 meter diamond dual band, and then I have a separate for the 1.2 gig. diamond antenna. And I like the diamond antennas. They're very well built and they're very sturdy.
Oh yeah, I've seen a few of them, and they are very well built for sure. Very, very nice. Yep. I used to be very active on HF back in the somewhere in the mid 90s, I guess. A lot of HF mobile. I designed and built an antenna using the Texas bug catcher as the prototype. It was basically the same type of an antenna, only I modified it a bit, and I was able to work it on 160 meters. So running a 160 meter mobile was a lot of fun. It was a challenge, but it was a lot of fun. And the coil on that antenna was 12 inches in diameter and 12 inches high. 9 foot whip on top of it. It was base loaded, so the coil screwed into a mag mount. Had capacitance hats on the thing, half a foot above the coil. Capacitance hats were like 18 inches each, and there were three of them. And that antenna worked very well. I had a tuner, so I was able to load it up on practically any frequency with the tuner. And had a lot of fun doing the 160 mobile. Worked obviously much better in the winter months when there wasn't quite as many static crashes, but I had a lot of fun with that for sure.
Oh, Tom, that's very interesting. I haven't met too many people that worked 160 from the mobile because of the antenna situation, but that sounds like a very interesting antenna, and it was held on by mag mount and with a 12-inch coil. That's an awesome wind load.
I also had some guy ropes on it. Two that went up to the front of the car and two that went to the back of the car. So it was guided. It wasn't moving around very much. That antenna, I should have taken pictures of that thing when I had it. I'm sure I did, but I don't remember where I put them now. But that was quite the antenna. I remember I was up in New Hampshire at the time. And I can remember coming down to Long Island and getting stopped in Connecticut. And I asked the officer, I said, is there something I did wrong? Because I knew I wasn't speeding. I was going to a small town, and I know I wasn't speeding. So I asked the officer, I said, did I do anything wrong? He says, no, actually, you didn't. But I would like to know, just out of curiosity, what planet you're talking to on this thing with this thing that you got on top of your car. I said, is there a problem with that antenna? He says, not as long as it's safe. I said, it's safe. You can check it out. And I got stopped because of my antenna. That was the first also. This is KC2DAW.
KC2WGV. Yeah, I was going to say maybe he was a ham and he was just curious of what you had up there because he probably never saw anything that looked like that. But now I understand if you had guy on it, that makes it a lot easier to do. Well, that's amazing. Well, Tom, I'm going to sign with you. I got to go feed my dog and do a few other little things. But it's a pleasure, as usual, talking to you. And if you hear us in there, just chime in anytime.
Okay, John, will do. And we'll say 73s. You have a good evening and a great week. And I'll talk to you down along. I'm on every day. You should get on with the morning crew, so maybe if you're on some morning, I'll be able to catch you on there, too. But I'm in and out. I like this group, and I get on here quite a bit from the mobile. So 73s, John. Feed the dog. Have a good one, and we'll catch you, as they say, down the log. So 73 again. 87DAW, Port St. Lucie, Florida. I'll be clear.
Good night, Tom. Enjoy. Well, I guess you got to enjoy the morning now. This is KC2WGB, 73 now.
I enjoyed the Q show very, very much. And good morning and good night. KC7DAW.
anybody's home there. I think everybody done went to bed about this hour. KC2LUQ.
KC2LUQ, N2RDB. Anyway, just testing this antenna on my radio here.
Alright, don't sound too bad. What do you got?
KC2VX7R. Running on high power. I replaced the stock antenna with this rather long 19-inch, very thin, very flexible whip antenna.
Oh, let me tell you. Sitting here right on the desk in front of me, I got a THF6A Kenwood that I've had for since 03. Well, I've had it 7 years. And the first thing I did was take that little antenna off and throw it away. And I got me that little 19-inch whippy there, plastic-coated piece of metal that you could just about try in a knot. And all of my friends said, what an improvement. Let me tell you, it was quite an improvement. So I think that not hearing your other antenna, just generally speaking from my experience, you're going to do real well with that.
Yeah, that's what I figured, since the other thing is basically a rubber-coated dummy load.
Exactly.
Anyway, thank you for your assessment. Name here is Tim, Tango India Mike. I'm in West Hempstead, Long Island, a few miles from the Highmark repeater site.
Okay, I'm just sitting here doing some work on my desk here. I do a lot of eBay stuff. I'm coming in, what, 146375 here.
And I'm coming in for 146850.
Yeah, they're connected together. Yeah, 147375, I meant to say. Well, very good, yeah, good luck with that. You're doing okay, and I did a comparison when I got that antenna. I took it on and off a couple times, and I asked all my friends how I sounded. And their consensus was that the long whippy does a lot better. So, anyway. From Rick, Roger, India, Charlie, Kilo, KC2LUQ.
Even the short whippy thingy, it's about 9-point-something inches long. Even that does a better job than what comes with the radio.
Yeah, the one that comes with it don't do such a good job. Now, that little thing, I'm not the Yaesu there. I'm not familiar with that. Is that the one that does 6 meters?
Correct. It's the predecessor to the 8R, which also does a whole bunch of digital stuff. Except the 7R... has a little more beefiness to it. It's a metal chassis. N2RDB.
The time is 1.
Oh, yeah, okay. I've not done anything on 6 meters, so maybe I will at some point. 7-3, Tim. Good luck there. Take care. 73 is from KC2LUQ. I'll be listening.
This is a closed circuit advisory and not necessarily for air. With an update on Newsline's finances, here's our producer, Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF.
I like to be able to say this. Some good news. As we go to air this week, all the bills through the end of May have been paid, and we still have close to, ready for this, $1,000 left in the checking account. Now, not counting our upcoming costs and the presentation of the 2010 Young Ham of the Year Award, we hopefully have enough to hold us through the end of the summer. It may be tight, but I think we're going to do it. Why the change from months past? It's mainly due to our adopting Skype, internet phone service, to make most of our long-distance calls. Now, unfortunately, Skype cannot call everywhere, so we still have to maintain our regular long-distance service. But, now here's the best part. That's gone down from about $300 a month to about $50 a month, and sometimes lower. And as an added benefit, and you've probably heard this when you listen to the newscast, the interview quality of the audio using Skype is vastly improved over the regular phone. Okay, that's the good news. The bad news, if you can call it that, is that we still need to raise about $600 to cover our portion of the expenses in presenting the Young Ham of the Year Award. That's going to take place in Huntsville, Alabama in mid-August. While our corporate underwriter, Vertex Standard and CQ Magazine, cover most of the expenses for the award recipient, we have the obligation of sending a member of the Newsline team to officiate at the ceremony, and we also host a Newsline-sponsored dinner in honor of the young award winner and his family. So if you can assist us in covering these expenses, tax-deductible contributions can be made via PayPal at our website of arnewsline.org or by U.S. mail to the address that you hear at the end of this week's newscast, to which I'm going to add my personal thank you for your support of both Amateur Radio Newsline and especially of the Young Ham of the Year Award program. That ends the Closed Circuit Advisory. I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. Now here's Frank Haas, KB4T in Holly Hill, Florida, with this week's newscast. Frank?
Thank you, Bill. Now, Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1715, with a release date of Friday, June 25th, 2010, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. A Wisconsin town says a ham tower must be lowered. The IARU says that three member societies have gone missing. A sports event causes ham radio licensing delays in South Africa. The ARRL warns its members of an email phishing scheme. And a radio club in Wales gets a big grant to buy new gear. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1715, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is this week's report.
A family of Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin ham radio operators may soon have to significantly lower or get rid of their amateur radio tower. This following a decision by the Township Plan Commission on Wednesday, June 16th. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, has the details.
The commissioners sitting on the Mount Pleasant panel unanimously rejected the request by Jim Markstrom, KB9MMA, to keep the 60-foot tower at his home. This after staff members cited several concerns, these being that the height exceeds the limit allowed by a village ordinance, that a similar tower collapsed in the late 1990s, and concerns by neighbors that Markstrom misrepresented their views on it. Madison attorney Mark Hazelbaker is representing the Markstroms. He pointed to federal and state laws that require local governments to reasonably accommodate amateur radio communications when the authority attempts to restrict it for health, safety, and aesthetic reasons. He also noted that an engineer's report showed the tower's base was safe and actually overbuilt. Hazelbaker stated that even if it were to fall, the study suggested that it would most likely collapse within itself. He said lowering the tower to 28 feet, which is the highest allowed by Mount Pleasant based on the distance it could fall, would unreasonably limit transmissions. But Mount Pleasant officials countered that wasn't the case with a ham radio tower that fell into a play area at home fewer than 15 years ago. Jim Markstrom is a 35-year-old professor and engineer who volunteers as amateur radio emergency coordinator for Racine County. His 10-year-old son, Sam, KC9POP, recently won an award for relaying severe weather reports via ham radio. Mount Pleasant began investigating the tower after receiving complaints from nearby residents about interference on home electronics. Although local governments can't legally intervene on that basis, officials determined that Markstrom never received zoning approval to put up the tower. 10 neighbors signed a petition asking Mount Pleasant to order its removal. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Norm Seeley, KI7UP, in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Attorney Hazelbaker said the Markstroms still hope to work with village officials to find a better resolution, but he also warned that further legal action is a possibility. A major sporting event has gotten in the way of issuing new hams their call letters and licenses in South Africa. According to the South African Radio League, candidates who recently passed the nation's radio amateur exam will have to wait a while longer before receiving their ham tickets. This is because the person at the nation's telecommunications agency, who is responsible for issuing amateur radio call signs, has been temporarily reassigned to process applications for the 2010 FIFA World Cup Soccer Championship. As such, he has had to focus on dealing with all aspects of spectrum licensing requests for this epic event. The South African Radio League says that it is in constant contact with the regulatory body and that the new licensees will be issued their call signs as soon as they become available. It also asks those on the waiting list to be patient and not contact the telecommunications regulator in any personal effort to try to speed up the process. The South African Radio League says that this will just create frustration for the applicant, the SARL, as well as the licensing authority. It could also result in further delays. The International Amateur Radio Union reports that it has not been able to contact three national ham radio societies for at least 5 years and believes that there is no evidence of their continued existence. The three groups are the Papua New Guinea Amateur Radio Society, CORA in French Polynesia, and the Burma Amateur Radio Transmitting Society. Under its rules, the IARU has called for evidence to be submitted that these radio societies are in existence by no later than September 13, 2010. Meantime, in other changes, the Radio Club of Paraguay has been reinstated to full IARU membership status. The Union des Radio Amateurs du Congo is a newly elected member, and a membership application is being considered from the Montenegrin Amateur Radio Pool formed in October 2008. The International Amateur Radio Union's Region 1 website reports that Omani hams have been given access to part of the 6-meter band. The report attributed to A41KB says that radio amateurs in that nation can now use the 50 to 52 megahertz band under permit by the Omani Telecommunications Regulatory Authority. Omani hams have this access on a secondary basis to other users of the spectrum. Hams in Thailand have been authorized use of 6 meters during the CQWW VHF contest. Thai amateur radio operators may operate 50 to 54 megahertz during the CQ Worldwide VHF contest for 48 hours on July 17th and 18th by a blanket permit granted by the National Telecommunications Commission. This will be the first use of the 50 to 54 megahertz allocation by Thai hams in 18 years. The last time such permission has been granted was in 1992 during the Southeast Asia Net Convention that year. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the N4 MWA repeater, serving the amateur radio community of Phelps, Kentucky. The ARRL says that crooks are trying to use its identity to try to get members' personal information, and it's warning members to ignore any requests seemingly coming from the league asking for such data. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, reports.
In a posting to its website, the ARRL says that it's received several reports from members with ARRL.net email accounts. These people tell the league that they've been recently contacted via email with requests asking for personal information, such as usernames and passwords. The ARRL says that these emails are fraudulent attempts at phishing and did not originate from that organization. For those not aware, the term phishing is pronounced phishing, but spelled with a P-H. It is where a cyber criminal will use someone else's trusted name, email, or both to try to get you to send them your personal information. According to ARRL Chief Financial Officer Barry Shelley, N1DXY, there is never a time when the league would ask via mass email for usernames and passwords of ARRL net users. He says that if you received an email asking for personal information and it looks like it originated from the ARRL, do not respond. Shelley says to just delete it. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
On a technical level, Shelley says that this is a very crude attempt at phishing, using an easily determined spoof of the originating and return address. Ham radio was there in the afternoon hours of June 20th when severe weather struck the Plains City of Billings, Montana. With very little notice, a tornado formed and touched down. Damage was severe to several businesses and a sports arena. Radio amateurs trained in emergency response were quickly involved in this event, providing communications assistance. The Yellowstone County Amateur Radio Emergency Service Team provided skywarn communications to the National Weather Service office in Billings, which included the first reports of the tornado on the ground and the damage it caused. Tom Frieders is a warning coordination meteorologist with the National Weather Service. He says that the ham radio operators played a key role in giving them needed information in order to provide accurate and timely warnings to the public. The FCC has jointly fined three Massachusetts residents $10,000. This for what the regulatory agency calls providing services and facilities incidental to the operation of an unlicensed transmitter. In simpler terms, it means that the agency determined that Delroy Johnson, Paul, and Richard Pereira were in some way sanctioning or supporting the operation of unlicensed transmitters on 97.5 megahertz in Hyde Park and Dorchester, Massachusetts. It's not asserting that any of the three ran the transmitting facilities, but that their support made it possible for the transmissions to be made. By way of background, this past March 8th, the Commission's New York field office issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture in the amount of $10,000 to the three regarding this matter. Neither Johnson nor the Pereiras has filed a response to the NAL. So, based on the information before it, the FCC has affirmed the fine and given the three the customary 30 days to pay or to file an appeal. Congratulations to our friends at QRZ.com. This as the website registers its 400,000th user into the system over the weekend of June 19th and 20th. QRZ founder and owner Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ, says that he does not know exactly who it was when it happened, but it made his group very proud just the same. Lloyd also says that on Friday, June 18th, QRZ installed another 12 gigabytes of RAM into its two main servers, which doubled the amount that they previously were using. Prior to the upgrade, QRZ could service 350 simultaneous requests. Now that number has jumped to nearly 1,000. With more and more VHFDX openings taking place, there's some good news regarding propagation beacons operating in IARU Region 1. This with word that the region's VHF beacon guide has been updated for machine-generated modes, or MGM. The change comes as the result of a recent meeting in Vienna, Austria, where the Region 1 VHF handbook has been updated to version 5.42. The chapter on beacons has been updated with machine-generated modes messaging options and can now be seen at tinyurl.com/22LASBA. Turning to the ham radio social scene, AMSAT UK has issued a final call for speakers for its colloquium 2010. This event is set for July 31st through August 1st at the Holiday Inn in Guildford in the United Kingdom. Speakers are invited on a variety of amateur radio space-related and associated activities. The submission of papers by speakers for presentation at the colloquium, along with any PowerPoint or similar material, should be made by email to david.johnson@blackpepper.co.uk. And congratulations to the Michigan Net, also known as QMN, as it celebrates its 75th anniversary this year. QMN is the nation's oldest public service communications network, having been in continuous operation since late 1935. QMN conducts routine CW traffic nets on 3563 kHz daily. It also sponsors the National Radio Emergency Net that provides nationwide communication support for major disaster operations, as well as an ongoing training program serving the entire United States. More information on the Michigan Net is online at www.michigannet.org. Europe's Hamtronic show in Friedrichshafen, Germany, better known simply as Ham Radio, takes place as we go to air on Friday, June 25th, continuing to Sunday, the 27th. For the first time as part of this international exhibition, there will be a contest university dedicated to training beginners and professionals in the art of radio sports. Also, this 35th annual show happens to coincide with the 60th anniversary of the founding of the German Amateur Radio Club, better known as the DARC. Ham Radio is often referred to as the Dayton of Europe. We will have more on the show upcoming in future Amateur Radio Newsline reports. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. South Africa's Sumbantilla Amateur Radio Satellite is back on the air. SO67, as it's known in AMSAT parlance, carries an FM transponder with uplink on 145.875 MHz and downlink on 435.345 MHz plus or minus Doppler shift, and is available for all hams to use worldwide. South Africa AMSAT is inviting radio amateurs in that nation to propose a name for its CubeSat project. The group says that the name should be a single word in any of South Africa's official languages and reflect the spirit of the project. For those not aware, a CubeSat is a 10-centimeter cube with a mass of up to 1 kilogram. The South African CubeSat project was announced at the recently held Space Symposium and will involve the design and construction of the flight hardware. And lest we forget, the closing date to submit an entry is the 15th of July. Entries should be sent by email to saamsat@intechcom.co.za. In a story first reported in the European EE Times, Vermont Technical College, Norwich University, St. Michael's College, and the University of Vermont are working together to land a tiny CubeSat on the moon. The design team is currently working on an initial proposal for the spacecraft, this with the aim of achieving further NASA funding in June 2011. Primary funding for this effort is already being provided by the Vermont Space Grant Consortium under a NASA grant. In the current phase of the program, the Vermont CubeSat project, led by Professor Carl Brandon of Vermont Technical College, aims to launch by 2015. It is developing the first CubeSat that can be launched from a geostationary orbit to successfully land on the moon. The CubeSat electronics are based on a Texas Instruments MSP430 processor, and the software will control navigation, communications, scientific instruments, camera, and the CubeSat's propulsion system. No word on what modes and radio bands it will operate. More is online at tinyurl.com/22VUZ7Q. NASA's Kepler mission has released 43 days of science data on more than 156,000 stars it has radioed back to Earth. Astronomers will use the new data to determine if orbiting planets are responsible for brightness variations in several hundred stars. These stars make up a full range of temperatures, sizes, and ages. Many of them are stable, while others pulsate. Some show star spots, which are similar to sunspots, and a few produce flares that could sterilize their nearest planets. These stars are being monitored for subtle brightness changes as part of an ongoing search for Earth-like planets outside of our solar system. On the air, the castles and stately homes on the air in Northern Ireland will have a major activation on July 16th. This with word that MI0RYL has obtained permission to activate both the Stormont Parliament buildings and Stormont Castle within the estate of the same name in Belfast. Propagation permitting, MI0RYL hopes to operate on as many bands and modes as possible throughout the day so as to allow as many amateurs as possible the opportunity to make contact. To commemorate this operation, a special QSL card will be issued to any contacts that are made. In DX, we begin with word that NN3W reports that over 13,000 QSOs for the 9M2HB operation have been uploaded to Logbook of the World. He thanks NK0S for doing the data conversion. On the air, CT1BOH will be active as CR3E from Madeira during the 2010 IARU High Frequency World Championship contest on July 10th and 11th. QSL via W3HNK. WB4WXE will be portable J6 on St. Lucia through July 7th, concentrating his operation on 6 meters. At times, with no propagation on 6, you'll find him on 17, 15, or 40. QSL via WB4WXE. GM0VMW currently is on duty on the Falkland Islands and is operating as VP8DNB/P on 20 through 2 meters. He's on the air as time permits, QSL direct via his home call. If you hear a station signing the call TS7C, don't waste your time making contact with him. It seems that the call sign TS7C was a de-expedition to Kirkenau, Tunisia, done back in January of 2009. This call sign is unique and has not been reissued. Lastly, the planned operation from Gabon has been canceled. I2YSB has announced that the new destination for the team will be Togo, with the operation taking place during the month of October. They expect to operate with 3 stations on all the bands. No other details have been provided other than the pilot station will be IK7JWY. And finally this week, an amateur radio club in Wales is one of 199 community projects to be awarded grants from the United Kingdom's Big Lottery Fund. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with the details.
The fund's Award for All program has made a £5,000 grant to the Fort Madawgan District Amateur Radio Society in the United Kingdom, this to permit it to buy new equipment. The club spokesman is Gary Brooks. Brooks says that this is excellent news and that they are obviously very grateful to the National Lottery for the grant. Brooks notes that his is a small club, but says this is a massive investment and a big opportunity to promote the society and what it does in the area. The grant money will enable more local people to learn about the hobby and, says Brooks, to get involved. The Big Lottery Fund distributes monies on behalf of the National Lottery to good causes across the United Kingdom. Its goal is to enable others to make a real improvement to communities and the lives of people across that nation. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in the City of Angels.
Currently, £5,000 is the equivalent of about $7,400 United States dollars. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, With Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Frank Haas, KB4T, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2010. All rights reserved.
Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL amateur radio repeater system.
For the bearing in the back. If you didn't take the bearing off the back of the boat there, if that thrust bearing is still in there,